I guarantee you, you know, this is a promise. You can call me out on this if I'm wrong. If the Panthers are up 2-0 at any point in game six, the Oilers lose.
I like that.
It's guaranteed 100% unless McDavid turns into Wayne Gretzky again, which he has done a couple times in the playoffs.
If Cale Makar would retire right now, is he a Hall of Famer? First ballot Hall of Famer. Welcome back to another episode from Checking From Behind. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We are 5 games into the Stanley Cup Finals. The Panthers are up 3-2. They are 1 win away from going back-to-back. They have looked like the much better team than the Oilers. And at this point, it looks like the Oilers, they're in their own heads right now. They don't know who to start a goaltender. We'll get to that in a little bit in the episode. The Panthers are just looking like the better team. Brad Marchand looks like 2011 Brad Marchand.
He's playing on another level right now. It's insane.
He's the first player in NHL history to have 5 goals in 2 separate Stanley Cup finals with 2 separate teams.
And they're probably like a decade apart.
Yeah.
I mean, this is his third. Third Stanley Cup final? I think it's his fourth Stanley Cup final.
He had
2011, 2015, 2019, and then this year.
I always forget about 2015.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. I don't know why I keep thinking the Lightning are in 2015.
No, I know. It was 2013.
Okay. Yeah.
I know they lost the Stanley Cup final to the Blackhawks. I know that.
It was 2013.
Yeah, 2015 was the Lightning. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I want to shift the focus over to Game 3 real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a good place to start because, I mean, I think that's where the Oilers kind of started to fall apart.
Well, in that game, you could tell that the Panthers got so much into the Oilers' head, and the Oilers tried to get the Panthers to make stupid penalties and commit them, and they were not doing it. They were just laughing in the Oilers' face, and there was multiple brawls and scuffles, and there was 85 penalty minutes on the Oilers in that game and 55 to the Panthers, and the Panthers had 11 power plays in that game. It was one of the most attempts in a single finals game in the history.
I'm surprised they only scored, they scored 5 goals that game. It should have been way more. 11 power plays in a Stanley Cup final.
I think they went 2-for-11, 1-for-11.
I mean,
like
kudos to the Oilers for killing off fucking 9 power plays. Jesus, that can't happen.
No,
that cannot happen. How are you supposed to? That's over a period. You're shorthanded. You can't expect to win that game.
No, and when
you know what, people are like, oh, well, Stuart Skinner needs to play better. What the fuck's he supposed to do? I don't think Stuart Skinner's been the reason the Oilers are down 3-2. I know they pulled him in Game 4. It wasn't his fault those 3 goals let in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their defensive breakdowns. You know, Calvin Pickard played his ass off in Game 4, but I think for Game 6, you got to go back to Stu.
I love the idea of going back to Stu because I love Pickard. He has been great in the playoffs. He's done whatever it takes to win. But Stuart Skinner has a much higher ceiling. His highs are really high.
Yeah.
He can steal you a game, and I don't think he's really going to lose you a game right now. The defense in front of him, the forwards in front of him are losing the hockey games. They're not helping out the goaltenders, and you can clearly see in games 3 and 4 before he got pulled, he was being held out to dry. There were dumb penalties by Vander Kane, especially, who he has to stay out of the box. And I saw a tweet of somebody says, everybody wants a player like Evander Kane until they take dumb penalties in big moments. I think that's a fucking stupid tweet, in my opinion. But back to Stuart Skinner. He has the ability to be able to make the big saves when
you need
him to.
Look at him against Dallas. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, if you get that Stuart Skinner in this series, you're probably forcing a Game 7.
Correct. And if they go back to Pickard, I think you can chalk the series up as a Panthers win.
Yeah. I mean, I got to give credit to the Panthers, you know. I don't know how they continue to do this. This is their third Stanley Cup final in a row. They've played so much hockey over these last 3 years. And, man, they do not let up. The whole game is just attack, 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 attack. If you want to beat them, you really have to earn that win. And, you know, I can't believe that they lost Game 4. First time ever in Stanley Cup final history that a team winning 3-0 after the first period lost the game.
Teams were 37-0 in, was it?
All time.
Yep.
All time since they started the Stanley Cup final, pretty much. And yeah, that was the only time a team lost in that situation. And especially for the way that Panthers team plays, just completely uncharacteristic. I mean, they kind of just fell apart.
Yeah, the Panthers got off to one of the best starts I've seen them get off to in the entire playoff this year. And all of a sudden, at the end of two periods, now it's a 3-3 game. And then the Oilers get another one back halfway through the third period, and it's like, holy shit, the Panthers are now up one.
Well, the biggest thing, too, in this series is, you know, you can't let the Panthers build the lead. The Oilers have only scored the first goal in one game this series. That was game one.
Mm-hmm.
You can, like, yesterday when I saw the Panthers went up 2-0, I was like, well, they're not – what happened in game four is not happening again. The Panthers are going to win. And, yep, they won.
Yeah.
They won 5-2. You can't let the Panthers get a multiple goal lead, because once they get comfortable with that lead, they're going to start playing a trap and they're going to just beat the fuck out of you physically, and you're not going to get any chances. They're so suffocating, and every player in that lineup, from, you know, the superstars and Barkov and Reinhardt all the way down to the fourth line, they know their role and none of them let up.
They just play winning hockey, and we've said this for the entire last month and a half that the playoffs have been going on. They get a one-goal lead, they're not going to give it up easily. And mm-hmm. the Oilers have gotten lucky this series by being able to battle back. And I'm sure it's...
Well, game one was a different story because that was more back and forth. Like, I don't think any team ever had a multiple-goal lead in that game.
No, it was just...
No, actually, I think the Panthers did go up 3-1 in game one when the Oilers battled back. But game two, the Oilers never had a chance. Game three, Oilers never really were in that game either. And then game four, they had to have... Arguably the greatest comeback in Stanley Cup final history to win that game.
And then Draisaitl nets his fourth overtime goal of the playoffs, which is an NHL record, by the way.
Oh, I mean, you can't put it on Draisaitl or McDavid. I thought they've both been fine. It's just lack of depth scoring has kind of been an issue for them. And I think their defensive play has not been good this series.
I think everything that we've seen through the first three rounds, except Draisaitl, Bouchard, Nugent Hopkins, and Draisaitl, has completely disappeared.
Well, game four, they were even down to five defensemen because Stetcher had such a bad first period. He didn't play the rest of the game.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he dressed for game five. He did play.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, that's another disadvantage you have there, too, because Bouchard's not really known for his defensive play. You know, Ekholm is your best all-around defenseman. I don't believe John Klingberg played yesterday. I think he's out with an injury. Yeah. He's been amazing for them.
He's been a huge loss for them.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, when they picked him up in the middle of February, everybody was like, what are you doing? And he's been arguably one of their better defensemen.
He's been their most consistent.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah. He has been. And game 5-2, Marchand, by the way.
Dude, oh my God. Where is he getting this from?
Did you see the goal?
Well, he split the defense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right off the faceoff. This dude's 37 years old. I mean, he looks like a different player since he got to Florida. He's rejuvenated.
Seeing him split the defense.
He's not even that fast of a player.
No, but he just, I don't know.
He's shifty, man. He's a smart player. Yeah.
I saw Matthew Tkachuk's reaction. The NHL posted it late last night of Tkachuk and the entire bench reaction to Marchand's goal. And holy fuck, would that be every single Panthers fan. That goal was probably one of the better goals I've seen this year.
I mean, you're getting to the point now where if I'm an MVP voter, you know, Panthers win the cup, who do you vote for? Do you vote for Sam Bennett or Brad Marchand? I think I vote for Brad Marchand.
I'm still leaning Brad Marchand.
I know Bennett scored a bunch of goals, but if you just look around all around contributions to the lineup, but yeah, Brad Marchand's been like playing like this since game one of round one.
He's been doing this
that third line for the Panthers. The whole playoffs has been arguably the best line in the playoffs.
It's been their most consistent line, that's for sure. I would go Brad Marchand. He's been one of the better players for the entire playoffs. He's been one of the better players in the entire Stanley Cup Finals, and overall, like, much love to Bennett because he's in for a
he scored 15 goals. That can't be understated either. It's a really tough decision. I don't think this will be a unanimous pick. It's not like last year where you had McDavid having the third best playoff in NHL mm-hmm. history. Only Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky have had better playoffs than him. Where he even though they lost, he still won MVP. But you couldn't deny him that. But this year's a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, it's going to be really close this year. And frankly, I wouldn't be mad if they gave it to either one either. Both are really deserving of it. And coming in, I thought maybe Barkov would have a little bit more of an impact. But
he's been too up and down. He's had a couple. Honestly, he's had a couple uncharacteristically bad games.
Yeah, and those are the only two games that they've lost.
Yeah.
So if in game six you get Barkov, what, the Panthers are do the Panthers have home ice or the Oilers?
Yeah, game six is in Florida.
Is it in Florida? Can line match with Connor McDavid? Shut the fuck.
Yeah. I mean, McDavid's only scored one goal this series. I mean, he has like, I think like 7 or 8 points though. So they haven't really shut him down. But they have effectively shut down the bottom six of the Edmonton Oilers. They haven't really contributed much. I mean, Kasperi Kapanen, you know, he had a couple good shifts in game four. But yeah, but outside of that, Jeff Skinner is not really a factor. Adam Henrique hasn't really been doing anything.
Corey Perry's been...
Trent Frederick has no goals.
Yeah, their entire bottom six has not been good. And I think the Panthers coming into the series... You know, we're not going to be able to completely shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. You know what? Actually, let them do their thing. We're going to try to slow them down. But the Panthers' bottom six has been effective enough to shut down the Oilers' bottom six. And it has kind of made McDavid and Draisaitl and Bouchard and the rest of the top guys to have to shoulder all of the weight. Because the Oilers, frankly, they're one of the more unbeatable teams in the league if their bottom six is going. And I think they have a pretty good bottom six. But then you look at the Panthers have been getting contributions throughout the entire lineup. And I think what also makes it more dangerous as a Panther is you're getting contributions from your third line like we brought up, whereas the Oilers aren't. And I think that's where you're getting contributions from your top three lines compared to the top two is where the difference is right now for the Panthers.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Just like looking at the stats. So the Panthers have played 22 playoff games, you know, eight players on their team have over 17 points.
Eight players?
Anton Lundell, Etu Lustorainen, Sam Reinhart, Alexander Barkov, Verhaeghe, Brad Marchand, Tkachuk, and Sam Bennett.
That's ridiculous.
The Oilers have four players that have more than 15 points, and you can probably guess who those are.
McDavid, Bouchard, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins.
Yep, because those are the only guys that have been consistent.
How many players have more than 10 points?
That's a good question. For the Oilers?
Yeah.
Corey Perry, Evander Kane, and Zach Hyman. And Zach Hyman hasn't played since the conference finals. And then for the Panthers, Evan Rodriguez, Aaron Ekblad, and Nate Schmidt.
Are we thinking that Zach Hyman being out is a bigger deal than what?
It is a bigger deal. I thought after game one, I thought they'd be okay. They miss him. They miss his physicality. He was leading I think he was close to setting a new record. I think he did set a new record for hits in the playoff.
Yeah.
He was doing everything for them. He was being super physical. He was contributing on the score sheet. They definitely miss him.
That was such a tough blow.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be that much of a blow. I was like, they can
handle I thought after – I knew it would affect him, but I thought after game one when they won, I thought they'll be okay without him. It still sucks, but they think they'll be okay, and they have no one stepped up to replace him in that lineup.
When is game six?
I think is it Tuesday night.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Do you have the Panthers – capturing the cup, or are we?
I think the Panthers. I think the Panthers win in Game Six, unless Stewart's. I'm assuming the Oilers are going to start Stewart's in Game Six. I think they should. I think that's the right decision to make. Honestly, I know Kevin Pickard kind of carried you through the second round. I mean, he's kind of similar to last year in the playoffs, mm-hmm. where Pickard came in, you know, kind of helped the team get back on track. You know, I know Stewart Skinner has been up and down, but like you said earlier, like his highs are so much higher than Calvin Pickard's, and. The Oilers just need to play better defense. I think the Oilers can force a game seven. They have to come out of the gates ready to go in game six. They cannot sit back. They cannot afford to go down 2-0 or 3-0 again. Because I guarantee you, you know, this is a promise. You can call me out on this if I'm wrong. If the Panthers are up 2-0 at any point in game six, the Oilers lose.
I like that.
It's guaranteed 100% unless McDavid turns into Wayne Gretzky again. Which he has done a couple times in the playoffs. Game one against the Kings, he was insane. He literally almost dragged his team back to a victory. And he's good enough to do that, so it was Leon Draisaitl. But, yeah, you can't go down 2-0 against the Panthers and expect to win the game.
You have to be the aggressor. Your backs are up against the wall. You cannot
you got to be disciplined. They've had all penalty issues, too. This is the most amount of penalties I can recall ever seeing in a Stanley Cup final. Normally, they put their whistles away and let them play, but Edmonton's doing stupid, obvious stuff that they have to call.
This isn't like some... ticky-tacky shit. This is blatant high six, blatant trips, blatant fucking cross.
Lazy, undisciplined penalties. And I don't care if your penalty kill has been decent. If you give a team 11 power plays in a game, they're going to score at least a couple.
And you're going to lose.
Yeah. Because you're spending a whole period of the game shorthanded.
Yes. You have to stop it. And yes, I agree. I think the Panthers do come out on top. And this sucks because I've picked against the Oilers every single year.
It was your fault. As soon as you picked the Oilers at six, I was like, oh, they're... I think you said Oilers in seven.
Oilers in seven.
I was like, oh, they're fucking losing then.
I'm still praying that the Oilers can pull off back-to-back. But
go back to being a hater, man. The Oilers were playing better when you were a hater.
Exactly. It's going to game seven now because I picked the Panthers. Now the Panthers are going to win because I just...
No, and now you're trying to do a reverse jinx. It doesn't work like that.
Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, W always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, W will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to W.GG and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order.
I'm loyal to the Oilers still. I love to believe in the Oilers, but just from what I've seen out of this Panthers team, they're up and down the roster. They're so well-disciplined. Everyone plays their part. Everyone knows their role. They don't really make many mistakes. Sergei Bobrovsky, and you have Sergei Bobrovsky's in there, who's just steady as they come, and he can make a big save when you need him to. He's only really been weak up high, but the Oilers haven't had really enough good chances to even get into a situation where they can score, have a good scoring chance to get the puck up high.
Been so suffocated.
Yeah. So, I mean, congratulations, maybe early to the Florida Panthers. Are we streaming that game on Tuesday?
Do you want to?
I think we could try.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun to do.
Yeah,
I mean,
we'll be streaming.
Stanley Cup will be in the building. If not, if there's a game seven, I think we should definitely stream that.
Sure. So we have some award news to go over. Some of the more major awards we have.
I think all the major awards.
Yeah, the Norris, the Hart, and the Calder Trophy have all been announced. The winners have been announced. Let's start with the Norris Trophy. Cale Makar wins the Norris Trophy. He ends up coming in front of Zach Werenski, who got second. Quinn Hughes, who got third. Kind of no surprise there. Cale Makar wins his second Norris Trophy, and this thought came right in my head the second I saw the news. If Cale Makar would retire right now, is he a Hall of Famer? First ballot Hall of Famer?
Arguably. I think he still needs to do a little bit more. I think he gets some more games. I mean, he's already won a Stanley Cup. He's won a Conn Smythe. He's won 2 Norris. I think he's capable of being a league MVP eventually as well. I think he's that good. I would say 50-50 right now, first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he just needs some more years, but I think he would be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know necessarily first ballot, but
I mean, yeah, like 400 games played right now. He has 420 points. He's coming off a 30-goal season, which has been done 18 times in NHL history by 11 defensemen.
I think when he's done playing, though, I think he'll probably have 4 or 5 Norris trophies. I'm not even joking.
Yeah, 4 or 5 Norris trophies. I think he'll eventually get another cup. He's that good.
Yeah.
Whether it's with the
as long as he's playing
without.
He's never leaving Colorado. Colorado would be insane to let him go.
Yeah.
Cale Makar is like, can do everything. I might sound crazy. He's like a modern day Nick Lidstrom who could also score.
No, he is.
I mean, I think you were arguing with me about this all year, but I think Makar is hands down the best defenseman in the league.
I'll still take Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes could have made the vote a little bit more competitive this year if he didn't get hurt.
Yeah, fucking glass piece of shit.
But I think Cale Makar, but that's been another issue for Quinn Hughes, like a little bit throughout his career's injuries. Cale Makar never really misses time.
No, he doesn't.
He takes care of his body, and he's a huge difference maker, and I think he's the best defenseman in the league.
There is a clip that has been resurfacing about MacKinnon talking about Cale Makar, and this was back when they first drafted Cale Makar, and MacKinnon's like, why the fuck did we just draft this dude out of, like, it was like the, I don't even know where he got drafted, but it was like right before he went and played a year in college, and MacKinnon's like, this dude's all right, whatever, like, not even being sarcastic, like, he didn't think Cale Makar was like that great of a player, and then he watched him in World Juniors that following December, he's like, holy fuck, this dude is good. And after his rookie year, when he won the Calder, correct?
I think so.
He did. He did win the Calder. MacKinnon's like, this dude might already be a top 5 defenseman in the league. And at some points in that 2022 playoff run, when he came straight from college to the playoffs, MacKinnon was like,
he was their best player.
He
didn't win the Calder his rookie year.
Yeah.
Yeah, 50 points, 57 games as a defenseman. Holy fuck.
In his rookie year, crazy.
Yeah, as a defenseman.
Right. And MacKinnon, at some points in that playoffs, was like, he's the best player on the team.
Yeah.
Coming out of college in the playoffs on their cup run. That's ridiculous.
That's why he won the Conn Smythe.
Yeah. That he is on track to be a top three defenseman of all time, in my opinion. Right.
Unless Cale Makar takes a team-friendly deal, and I think next year is the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
He's going to set a new standard for what an elite defenseman makes in the NHL. He's going to be the highest paid player.
He's going to break the bank.
He's going to be the highest paid defenseman in the league and won't be close.
It'll probably be a good $3.5 to $4 million difference. I think
I could see him getting $14-15 million a year. Completely honest.
$15 million. I really like that.
He's that good. He's the best player. I mean. Nathan McKinnon's great too. What was Nathan McKinnon getting? 14?
I'll check that. I thought it was 12.
No, you might be right. It's 12.
It is 12.
Yeah, but you to find a defenseman like that, it's just so rare. You kind of just pay him whatever he wants. I honestly wouldn't put it past Makar to take a team-friendly deal. He kind of did on his deal he's on right now. So, especially because the Avs are always going to be a team that's really cutting it close to the salary cap limit. They need any extra dollar they can get. And, you know, if Makar wants to win another championship there, which I think he does, I could see him taking a team-friendly deal.
Yeah, he is eligible for an extension next July 1st. So
and
July
I'm sure
1st,
they will get that done as soon as they can.
I'm sure it will be done the first few days.
Yep. I think it's just a matter of how many years do you want, how much money do you want.
Yes, and right now he's only making $9 million, which is
an
absolute
bargain,
steal.
Bargain for a two-time Norris-winning defenseman. That's the biggest steal in the league.
If you are Makar, though, going into those contract talks, I think that you do have to understand that you have to go get your bag, though.
Oh, like, he's going to get a raise. I think it starts minimum $12 million a year.
Yeah,
minimum.
He just read my mind.
Yeah. And I think it can go up as high as a 15. I think anything higher than 15 is a little crazy right now, even though I think he's worth anything he wants. But, yeah, he's going to get a raise for sure.
One of the few players in the league that you hand a blank checks, like write your own check.
Yeah, it's just pretty much how many years do you want? I'm sure they'll want to do 8 years, but it's like, do you want 7, 8, 6? And how much money do you want?
If I'm the Avalanche, I would be okay with an 8x15. I'll go high as 15. And it's not because I don't think he's worth more.
In a few years, the cap keeps going up like the way it is. That will be nothing.
Exactly. Like,
might be a lot at first, but yeah, over time it will just keep getting less and less. And then, you know, we'll be saying like 20, 30. It's like, man, what a steal. 15 million a year for Cale Makar.
It'd be like 3 years ago when we were looking at all these players making 10, 10.5. It's like, that's a lot of money. Now it's like, that's like average, like top six money.
Well, especially, yeah, the salary cap, you know, rumors of NHL doing another expansion, that's a guaranteed like another few billion dollars in revenue for the league. And, you know, that revenue they got from Vegas and Seattle coming to the league also led directly to the salary cap going up.
And you have... I actually want to get into this later, talk about Atlanta and everything, but I'm excited for Atlanta to possibly be back in the league
for a third time. I think if they have like actual ownership that cares, I think they can be successful. That was Atlanta's problem the last time they had a team, is the ownership group did not want a hockey team.
Nope. And eventually they folded because
they weren't making any money.
No. So, well, they didn't fold. They relocated, but like basically the same fucking thing at this point. Let's go on to the Calder Trophy. Lane Hudson, no surprise, wins it. Had a historic rookie season, tied the assist records for defensemen, and he had one of the best rookie seasons ever. Yeah. And the C, I don't think it was really, I guess, a question if Dustin Wolf or Macklin Celebrini were going to end up winning it. Maybe Celebrini, because it's like first overall pick.
He had a good rookie year.
He did. I thought that the other two were deserving of it too.
Oh, you can make an argument because, yeah, Dustin Wolf, like, if he wasn't playing the way he was, Calgary's not even in playoff contention. And, you know, they almost did make the playoffs. And then Celebrini's on the worst team in the league and still had a rookie year that he had was really impressive with no help around him, really.
Yeah. Overall, he ended up helping the Canadiens clinch the playoff berth. And seeing what Lane Hudson did as a defenseman, he had kind of a rougher start to the season as far as I can remember. He was turning the puck over a little bit. He kind of looked lost out there.
Normal stuff. Rookie defenseman, that's normal.
And then after like the first month or so, he got comfortable. He was able to make plays. He was confident. He wasn't scared to make turnovers.
Power play merchant.
he wasn't forcing plays. He just looked like he's been in the league the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was very impressed by his poise.
His poise, his effectiveness with the puck, without the puck, and his defense really didn't start to take the next step until halfway through the season. And then when we saw his defensive game start to improve a lot, that's when it's like, holy shit, this dude is a legitimate franchise defenseman. And of course,
I think he can have a similar, you know, what's the word?
Trajectory
as maybe like a Kale McCarr. He had a better rookie season than Kale McCarr. Mm-hmm. I think he still needs to work on his defensive game a little bit. I think right now he's a pure offensive defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could work on his all-around game anymore, and I think if he can get better defensively, I can see him being like a Norris candidate year in, year out.
This came to the top of my head. The trajectory that he's on right now, you just mentioned Kale McCarr, but you also mentioned his defensive game lacks. This is not a shot at a player I'm about to name. His trajectory right now, would you put him closer to a Kale McCarr or an Evan Bouchard?
That's a good question. I mean, Evan Bouchard didn't come out of the gate swinging like Lane Hudson did. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing with Evan Bouchard, though, is like he kind of takes it to another level in the playoffs. I don't know. I would say right now, just based on, you know, he won the Calder. You know, he had a better rookie season than Kale McCarr. I'd say I think high Kale McCarr, maybe on the lower end, maybe a guy like Evan Bouchard, which isn't a diss on Bouchard. No. He's still a great offensive defenseman. It's just he doesn't really have a two-way game.
No. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with it. If Hudson does improve his defensive game, 100%, I like the Kale McCarr comparison. Of course, it's very early, too, and I don't want to set high standards.
I think he'll just keep getting better. I think the Canadians are in an amazing spot right now. They have so much young talent, and I think them making the playoffs this year was huge. Nick Suzuki had an awesome season. Cole Caulfield, awesome as well. Yaroslav Slavkovsky is getting a lot better. And then you have a guy like Lane Hudson in there. You know, Sam Montembeau battled. They do have a goalie up and coming in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, you know, when he gets there. I think that could be a big difference maker for them. But Montreal is a team that is just going to keep getting better and better and better.
They're set up for the future, and I think they have one of the brighter futures.
Ivan Demidov was really good coming out of the gate in the limited time we saw him in the NHL at the end of the year. You know, we had a guy like Patrick Laine, who, you know, when he was out there, he was really good for them. He's got some injury issues, but
you have a David Reinbacher who has been out all season due to an injury. Like you mentioned, Fowler and Dobesh coming up through the system. Dobesh already has some NHL playing time this season. So if I'm a Canadiens fan or part of the organization, I'm excited. The Hart Trophy ended up going to Connor Hellebuck. He gets back-to-back award winners here. He got the Vezina and he gets the Hart Trophy. The Hart Trophy, I felt like it could have gone to any of the three finalists too, but they felt like Connor Hellebuck just was the most valuable player on a team.
I agree with that. I think Connor Hellebuck by far was like, if you take Connor Hellebuck off the Jets, no, this is on the Jets. They have a good team, but I don't know if they're a wild card team at best, I think. There's no way they're competing for that division championship.
He stole them so many games in a regular season. He put up close to record-breaking numbers as a goaltender. And I agree. If he's not on the team, if they have, like, average goaltending.
Well, their backup was freaking Eric Comrie.
Yeah.
He's not good.
No wonder Hellebuck has to play 60 games a year.
That is a reason why. When you have a backup you can't trust. I think that would do the Jets wonders if they can get a more consistent backup goaltender to give Hellebuck a little bit of a break during their season.
If you can get Hellebuck a better backup, and he's only playing 50 to 55 games, you're in a much better spot. And I don't like making excuses like with the whole games played because you have to play the games that you're put into. But playing 60 games a season, multiple seasons back to back to back to back, eventually wears on a goaltender like Hellebuck.
It does, but I mean, in the playoffs, Hellebuck just couldn't make a save on the road.
No. In the second round, he was better. He wasn't the reason they lost.
First round, that game, this series should not have gone seven. No. Because Hellebuck forgot how to play hockey when he was in St. Louis for some reason.
If he played how he did in Winnipeg, how he did in St. Louis, I think
they sweep him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no disrespect to St. Louis. I mean, they battled hard, but Hellebuck was awful in those games in St. Louis. He got pulled in all three of those games.
Some of those shots against him in St. Louis, though, were absolute nips, though. They were.
Yeah, and some of them were softies.
That's also true.
You can't let the softies go in. No. You know, if there's a shot, like, it's just a perfect shot, like, at a great angle, high velocity, there's just nothing you can do. It's like, okay, he's not going to be able to do that again.
Like, in Game 3, when the Blues went up big early in that game, a couple of those shots from Kyrou, and I think Snuggerud scored late in the first period or something like that. Maybe it was Game 4. Either way, some of those shots were just top corner, like, perfect shots. Like, you can't blame
them.
Yeah,
you got to live with those. Like, it's the NHL. Everyone's good. Once in a while, you're going to get a shot or a move that just you can't defend.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
And then later in that series, some of the goals that he loves.
Like the game seven, he let in a couple softies.
It's like, what are we doing?
The Jets, I can't believe the Jets won that game seven still.
Miraculously had the comeback.
That was insane. That might have been the craziest game of the playoffs. I think either that or game four of the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. And I'm looking at Hellebuck getting all these awards. Back-to-back Vezina. He now has a Hart Trophy. First Hart Trophy goaltender winner since Carey Price in 2014. He is either the third or fourth in the 21st century because Theodore won it in 2002. He won it sometime in the first couple years of the 2000s. Are we looking at Hellebuck right now as a top three American goaltender in NHL history?
I think he's the best American goaltender of all time.
Over Miller and Quick?
Yes. Really? I think right now the only thing Quick's got over him is he's won Stanley Cups. I think he's already better than Miller. Miller only won Vezina.
Yeah, didn't win a championship. Only has a few playoff
didn't win appearances. NBA. No, Connor Hellebuck, I think, and once he gets the Stanley Cup, he's for sure the best American goalie of all time. The only thing Quick's got over him is Stanley Cups.
Hellebuck plays. How old is Hellebuck?
I think he's like late 20s, early 30s,
dude,
somewhere around
has,
there.
He
still has another
time.
5 or 7 years left playing at like a high level.
I mean, looking at his career stats. Oh, that's career playoffs, sorry. Career, just his entire career, 568 games played. He already has 322 wins, a 2.56 goals against average, and a .918 in his career. He's 32 years old. He probably still has another 2 to 3 years to go in his prime, in my opinion.
Goalies can usually be in their prime to like mid to late 30s.
We saw it with a Tim Thomas. He didn't enter his prime until he was damn near fucking 30, and he went on until he was 37, 38.
Yeah, I think Connor Hellebuck, I think he can continue to play at like a really high level to around 36.
I'm going to ask you another question. There's been a lot of questions going back and forth on this. But are we looking at Connor Hellebuck now as this generation's Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist type, where he's so dominant, but he just can't quite get that cup? Maybe he can get a finals appearance like a Lundqvist did, like a Price did, but he can't really get that championship.
I think that's a good comparison. He's definitely the best goaltender in the league right now. I don't think it's close. You know, because Carey Price, I think people forget how good he was. I know he hasn't played in a few years. And, you know, he is either quite possibly the only reason the Canadiens made the Stanley Cup final in 2021.
I'm going to pull up the stats.
He was playing out of his mind. But Carey Price, there was a reason why, you know, he signed like a ridiculous contract, I think like a 2014 or something, around right around there, where he was like, I think he was like the first goalie to ever get like double digits.
It was $10 million, I think.
At the time, that was like, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You're playing a goalie $10 million a year. But it wasn't even close. He was so much better than everybody else.
These are Carey Price's career stats. 712 games played, 361 wins, 49 shutouts, 2.51 goals against, and a .917 save percentage. And going to that 2020 playoff run, he was the reason that they ended up just getting to the finals, because he ended up having, was it
2021.
In 22 games played, a .228 goals against, and a .924 save percentage. He was actually, I'm looking at his stats.
I think it was the best playoff he ever had.
No, it wasn't.
Jesus.
His best playoff he ever had was, well, you know, we'll go with the 2019-20, where in 10 games played, he had a .178 and a .936. The year before, they lost in 6 games. Oh, sorry, not the year before, but in 16-17, a .186 and a .933 save percentage. The Canadiens averaged 1.5 goals per game, and they lost in 6.
Yeah, you know, Carey Price is good.
He is good. We have a trade. The breakdown. The Rangers finally can
thought
get
you,
rid of...
I thought you just like announced like a trade that just happened now. I was like, what?
That would be crazy stuff. The Rangers ended up trading Chris Kreider to the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks acquired Kreider in a 2025 fourth round pick, which is 104th overall, and the Rangers acquire Carey Terrence, who's just a B-level, C-level prospect, I believe he is. And the Rangers, complete cap dump.
Yeah.
They don't retain anything, which I think is a huge W. In my eyes right there, getting rid of the entire $6 to $6.5 million, big win in my books to fear the Rangers.
I mean, the Ducks have, I think, the lowest cap in the like lowest salary hit in the league, so they can really take on any contract right now.
Oh, sorry. The Rangers also acquired a 2025 third-round pick, 89th overall. Forgot that. But, yeah. I'm looking at this deal as A, like I just said, a cap dump. B, you don't retain any salary. That's a big deal. And three, I wonder if the Rangers either A, to plan on to do something this offseason, or if they want to free up cap because I think they're going to move into a new era. Because there was a report that I saw that if Kreider waived to go to Anaheim, Mika would be willing to waive. And I wonder if Mika's going to get traded. And I talked to you about this when this trade happened. What if... if the Rangers are out of a playoff spot by the deadline with Panarin at 34 years old, expiring deal, ship him off to a contender, get as much back as you possibly can.
I think if they're clearly out of a playoff spot, yeah, I think that's the right thing to do. I think he has full trade protection as well. So he'd have to waive. He'd probably want to go to a cup contender. Mm-hmm. I hate to say this, but I could see him just want to say, I want to go to Florida. You know, he's good. He's really good friends with Sergei Bobrovsky. And, you know, I could see him wanting to go to a cup contender like that. And Florida always finds a way to make it work.
Florida's going to be like, yeah, you want to just come to us? Yeah, fourth round pick, take it or leave it. It'll be fucking a Patty Kane thing with where he was with Chicago before he got traded.
Yeah, I mean, players have that right if they have a full-on movement clause. But, yeah, I could see that. I think this is a start of kind of like, I wouldn't say a rebuild, a retool for the Rangers because, you know, they've had this core for the last few years. It hasn't worked. Oh, you know, yeah. They got to the conference final a couple years ago. And they lost. They couldn't score. And, you know, Chris Kreider was not – he was awful last season. Mika Zibanejad disappears for stretches. I think Panarin, you don't trade right now unless you're like not clear – you're the deadline, you're, like, clear out of a playoff spot, which I don't think the Rangers will be. I think Igor Shesterkin's too good for them to be, like, that bad at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll at least be around wild card contention most of the season. I think I could see them battling for a playoff spot. I mean, we'll see what happens this offseason if – what free agents they look to bring in, but I think it's just clearing out money, you know, just to get ready for the future. Not the greatest free agent class in the world, so I can't see them going out and spending a ton of money.
I do think that the Rangers had to go down the path of a retool. They're getting a little bit older.
You can't retool, though, with that contract you just gave Shesterkin.
Or JT Miller, too.
Yeah, that trade was stupid. I still don't know why they traded for JT Miller.
They would be in a much better spot if they didn't trade for JT Miller.
He's better at this point right now than he is in like Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad, but a long-term deal on an older player, I just don't get it.
He's making $8 million until the end of 29-30.
Yeah, how old is he right
32.
Now?
32.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No, unmovable contract, some would say.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to retain 50% if you eventually want to trade him. Like, even in 2 years when he's fucking 34, 35 years old, he still has 3 years left on his deal. You're not moving that.
Yeah, so that's why I don't think they can do a rebuild right now. You have to be a retool, be smart in free agency. They do have a couple guys to sign. I'm curious to see what they do with Keandre Miller. Because I think that's their biggest question mark. Also, another big question mark for them is, you know, do they end up moving him? I think the best thing for Keandre would be for him to get moved.
If I'm the Rangers, I know they want to test the RFA market for Miller. You just trade his rights, I think. Just trade his rights. And I think there's a lot of questions with this team. And I know Drury just got an extension, which is meh. I don't know how I feel about him being the GM on this team right now. But Alexi Lafreniere did not have a great season. He's making 7.4. Right now, you have a Will Cully who is an RFA as well. You have these younger guys with a ton of potential that can make some noise around the league, that have made some noise around the league at some point. But it's just the player development of the team has lacked. And now you add that with three players who are making, well, Panarin's worth the 11 points.
Yeah, he's worth his contract. He was not bad last year.
But
you have
Mika and JT Miller and Alexi Lafreniere combining to make $24 million. And they're giving you less than 70 goals combined. That cannot happen right there.
Just to pivot over to like to kind of the Ducks side of this trade, because they were also, I always forget that the Ducks exist. I'm going to be completely honest with you. And that's not me being a hater. Yeah. They don't do anything. They're not a big spender. They don't really make trades. They just kind of exist.
I think Verbeek's doing a pretty solid job.
I know Chris Kreider is an older player, but Ducks have plenty of cap space. They have nothing to lose from this trade. And I think adding a veteran, a guy who could score 30, 40 goals, you know, I think he will, but I think that would just his presence on the room, I think, will be really big for the young players in Anaheim.
He only has 2 more years left on his deal.
And they have
plenty of
cap space. Like, this is not an issue for the Ducks. For the Ducks, you get a well-respected veteran, you know, who's been a top goal scorer in this league for a long time. And you know what? He could teach your young players a lot of stuff.
the Ducks, what they're doing right now is what the Blackhawks wish they were able to do, in my opinion. Like, you have the
I don't know if, like, if the Rangers were actively shopping around Chris Kreider, like, or the Ducks just said, hey, you want to get rid of that contract? Mm-hmm. We'll give you, like a B-tier level prospect. You know, who knows what he ends up becoming. Yeah. I mean, I remember we were discussing kind of, like, Kreider getting traded before, and, like, I literally said the return is going to be, like, a mid-round pick and, like, a B-level prospect, which is exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. That's how those trades kind of work when you're just doing a cap dump like that. And I think Kreider can still score 20 goals a season. We'll see. He's still a good net foot presence, and I think he'll be really good for a really young Ducks team who just needs some good veteran leadership in that room.
The leadership that he's going to add to that room and the experience that he has not only in the NHL but also internationally as well, and he has been a winner. I'm just overall looking at this trade as, I know I said I love it for the Rangers. I love it for the Ducks.
I think it's a win-win trade. Yeah. You know, the Rangers, you move on from a bad contract. You know, it sucks to look. I think the Rangers might end up retiring his number, to be completely honest with you. If you look at his overlying stats, his career as the Rangers, he's one of the best Rangers ever.
Yes, he is.
Like, and I don't know if he's a Hockey Hall of Famer, but he'll be in the Rangers Hall of Fame for sure.
Some people hate to hear that, but that's the truth.
A lot of Rangers fans are devastated that they traded. They knew in their heart it was the right thing to do, but it still hurts to see, like, a guy that's been there for his whole career. He's been there for, like, 15 years.
Yeah.
To see him move on. It's just, you know, he's a Rangers legend. Completely honest with you.
And I really, 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 really loved what the Ducks are doing. And I know at the beginning of the season you said they were going to be the worst team in the league. I said the Flames were going to be the worst team in the league. And
I am a Ducks hater, but I mean, they were better than I thought, but I still think they're still a mid team. I think they still have a lot of work to do if they want to be a playoff team next year. I think this was a good start, though.
They ended up finishing off with 80 points this season, which I think is a better step. And if the Ducks next season, they want to take that next step, if they can get 85 points or at least get above 500, I think that's okay.
Well,
and
I heard a rumor for the Ducks that they are very interested in Mitch Marner.
And I also heard that too, and I heard that they're going to throw as much money as humanly possible.
And they can afford to do that right now. And, you know, like I said, when I first saw that rumor, I forget that Anaheim exists. Like, and again, I do not like the Ducks, but I honestly just, they're a forgettable free team. Like, they haven't been good for years. They never make noise in free agency. They never really do big trades. So you can't blame me for forgetting about them. They make me forget about them. But I think that would be a great move for the Ducks, too, to bring in a guy like Mitch Marner. I think Mitch Marner would like playing there because there's literally no pressure playing there because you're living in California and you're not even the biggest California team.
And then we're going to forget that Mitch Marner is on the Ducks months in.
Because he's going to be playing 10 o'clock on Tuesday nights, and I'm like, I'm not going to watch that. They're the Ducks.
And then
those ugly jerseys.
And then by the Olympic break, we're going to be talking about, damn, Mitch Marner's on the Ducks. Damn, he's one of the leading point scorers in the league on the Ducks.
Yeah, that would be a good fit. I mean, it'd be really weird to see. It's going to be really weird to see Chris Kreider in an orange jersey. It'd be really weird to see Mitch Marner in that jersey, too. We'll see what happens, but Anaheim has the money to go big game hunting, and Mitch Marner is the biggest catch right now, and if you want to throw whatever money he wants, if money's a thing, I don't know if Mitch Marner is looking to get paid or he wants to go to a place where he has a chance to win another championship. I think if that was the case, I think he'd stay in Toronto. But
$33 million in cap space. Your only big RFA is Mason McTavish. Your biggest UFA is Robbie Fabry. You also have Drew Helison, who's an RFA, but outside of that, you have nobody. You can throw $15 million at Mitch Marner right now.
I mean, they do have to sign eventually Leo Carlson to an extension. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to keep getting better.
Cotter
Gauthier had a decent rookie year. I'm just trying to look at their team really quick.
Trevor Zegras is an RFA next year, too.
I think you trade Trevor Zegras.
Really?
Yeah, Mason McTavish is an RFA. I'm mm-hmm. curious to see what kind of contract he's going to get. I still think he has pretty high upside. I think he's probably going to end up in a bridge deal. It's going to be interesting to see. They have Pavel Mintikov. I probably said his name wrong. He's a good young defenseman. They still have John Gibson. They had arguably one of the best goaltending tandems in the league last year.
Are we ready for the John Gibson trade rumors come July 1st?
I don't think they traded him. If you know, Pat Verbeek said at the end of the season, his goal is for the Ducks to make the playoffs next year. You're not making the playoffs without John Gibson.
Nope. You're not. I think I'd give it another year with a tandem of Dahlstrom and Gibson at least.
Yep.
Dahlstrom had a phenomenal season, but I don't think Dahlstrom was ready to take on a 55-game season yet. How many? Actually, I'm kind of curious how many games he played this year now.
He played 54 games.
54, okay, so...
John Gibson didn't miss time with an injury.
Okay.
He had, but on that pretty bad Ducks team, was 23-23-7, 310 goals against, and 903 save percentage, which is not bad for a team that bad.
No, it's not. He had a phenomenal start to the year. I remember at one point, like a month and a half, he was in trade, not trade considerations, fuck. Sorry, thinking of John Gibson. He well,
John Gibson's in trade every year.
Yeah, he is. Lucas also was in part of a Vezina consideration to start the year. He started that hot. Let's get into a little bit of more mulling news, I guess. TJ Oshie, he finally announced his retirement after being gone from the league for the last 2 years. What a career he had, and he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's in the Hall of Good, and he's a player that a team would love to be in the middle six and on that second line.
Well, I think a really good thing, like, because when he announced his retirement, our group chat with Chris, he was saying, Chris was like, I didn't realize he had that many points. A lot of people forget, like, how consistent of a player he was. His problem was he was just so physical. He just had so many big injuries, and he never really had really played full seasons. But he was so good for the Capitals. They don't want a Stanley Cup without him. And you can hold me on this. I think the Capitals are going to retire his number. I think he was that good for them.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big part of their first Stanley Cup championship ever, their only Stanley Cup championship. And he was just important to that team as Ovi and Backstrom were.
So we're looking at one day, Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie's numbers all.
No, they can't retire Backstrom's number yet because I don't think he's technically retired yet. But yeah, no, they're going to build an Ovi a statue, obviously.
Yeah, he's going to get one.
Yeah. I'd make an argument maybe you just retire eight around the league, but.
Fuck it.
Best goal scorer of all time. But yeah, they're definitely retiring Backstrom and Ovi's number for sure. Not even a question, but...
TJ Oshie, even though the last 4 to 5 years, he battled a lot of injuries, like you said.
He played through them.
Yeah, he did. He was a vital part into Washington's not only cup run, but also all of their playoff appearances as well. And funny enough, he played one more season on the Capitals and the Blues, which is crazy because when I think of the early 2010s Blues, I think of a TJ Oshie, a David Backes, a Vladimir Tarasenko, and a bunch of these other guys. And then Oshie gets shipped off to St. Louis, and then he helps them win a cup almost immediately.
Yeah, he was really good right off the bat. He had the two or three best years of his career with the Capitals. But the one thing I always think of TJ Oshie for is that legendary performance he gave in the 2014 Olympics against Russia in that shootout where he won the game for Team USA. I mean, I think that was one of the best moments in hockey history. Like, that's what I always think about when I think of TJ Oshie.
I think that's a second best moment in hockey history. The only one being first is, I think, the miracle on ice.
Yeah, I don't think you could top that. No. I mean, I get chills just when I think about that sometimes. Just the circumstance, when you think of the history behind that whole situation. If you haven't watched the movie Miracle, do yourself a favor. Really good movie version of, you know, the miracle on ice. It was a bunch of young kids beat the best team in the world.
That might be one of the best movies I've ever watched.
I mean, if you're a hockey fan, you need to watch that movie.
Yeah, and TJ Oshie in that shootout just going back to back to back.
He put Team USA on his. He put the whole country on his back.
And he just kept beating Bobrovsky.
He kept doing the same movie.
Yeah.
But just one more thing I want to add, because, you know, when I said, like, I was like, oh, they might retire his number, people were like, retire his number? They only do that for, like, legends. Like, well, you have to think of it, too, as, like, a franchise legend.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's number, you're not retiring a number across the league. It's just for that organization. And there's plenty of teams that have retired lesser players' numbers. Like, I think a great example is the Ottawa Senators retired Chris Neal's number.
Mm-hmm.
Why? He was a goon. But he meant a lot to the organization.
Yeah.
And he meant a lot to the fans.
And he put his heart out there during those Ottawa Senators teams that made a deep playoff run year after year after year.
He wasn't scoring a bunch of goals, but he probably had a lot of penalty minutes. But the team, he was a big part of the team, and the fans loved him. And the Ottawa considers him a franchise legend because of that. And I think if you look at what TJ Oshie contributed to the Capitals, he's definitely a franchise legend because he's a really big part of why the Capitals won a Stanley Cup.
I want to check his stats in there.
He was almost a point per game player in that Stanley Cup run for them.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
In 106 career playoff games, he did have 69 points.
Yeah. TJ Oshie's always biggest issue was it was just lingering injuries. He was always playing, battling through something. Just give it that. He was a a pure power forward.
Yeah, he put up 20-plus points in 24 games in that playoff run.
Yeah, he was instrumental. They don't win the Stanley Cup without him.
No, playing 17, 18 minutes a night, in every situation. When they needed a goal, he was out there. When they were up by one, the other team pulled their goalie, he was out there. Like, he was out there for every situation, and I kind of want to agree with retiring the jersey. And
I think it's inevitable. I think they will. I honestly think you can make an argument for maybe John Carlson too for the Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, obviously they're retiring Ovi and Backstrom's number without a doubt. I mean, those are both Hall of Fame players. But
some of the best player. Well, Ovi is the best player in Capitals history. Backstrom is one of the best in Capitals history.
But dude, Backstrom, oh my God. Have you ever seen some of the passes he gave out? You should go look up like a highlight reel of just Backstrom's passes. I saw one in person. I had glass seats to the Sabres Capitals game, and there was like three guys between him and Ovi. He just sauced it over everybody's stick, and it landed perfectly right on the tape. Like, it landed on the ice right before it got to Ovi's tape, and he just tapped it in.
Top three playmaker of all time.
Oh my God, he was so good at his backhand sauce pass. He was so smooth. I don't know. He was ridiculous. You just watch a reel of just his passes. He was unreal. He had literally eyes in the back of his head.
He knew where everybody was on the ice at all times. And then when he would pass the puck, it looked effortless. It looked majestical.
Always perfect.
Perfect. If you would, of every single one of his passes he made, if it was in slow-mo, it'd be a perfect saucer.
He's insane. I don't think Ovi breaks the goal record without him.
I'm pretty sure Backstrom had assisted on like 500 of Ovi's goals or something crazy.
Wouldn't
like
surprise
that.
Me. It's definitely over 450.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. Backstrom and Ovi, easy retirees. They'll both be in the Hall of Fame. But TJ Oshie, I think they, not right away, probably in a few years, they'll retire his number.
Yeah,
he's definitely a Capitals Hall of Fame player, not a Hockey Hall of Fame player. He's in the Hall of Very Good.
Yes. He is not going to be a Hockey Hall of Famer. And I want to preface that. And that isn't a slight against Oshie, but I look at the Hockey Hall of Fame as the best of the best. And I don't think Oshie was the best of the best.
My thing with like any kind of Hall of Fame, you know, whether it be like a franchise Hall of Fame or like a Hockey Hall of Fame, is can you tell the story of the game of hockey without mentioning that player's name? I think you can. Well, outside of that Olympic moment in 2014, you know, obviously, that's going to be talked about forever.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, you know, career-wise, like in the NHL, like, yeah, I don't think Oshie's a huge part of hockey history. Like Ovechkin, like, you can't tell a story of hockey without mentioning Ovechkin's mm-hmm. name. But you can't tell the story of the Washington Capitals without mentioning TJ Oshie.
That is correct. And that is why they'll retire his jersey.
Yep.
I like that. Maybe I'll start going by that. And
because you have to remember, it's per franchise, not mm-hmm. overall league-wide impact. It's franchise impact. And every team has a couple players where you look at them and like, they retired that guy's number. But then when you go and talk to the fans, you're like, oh, I fucking loved him. It was my favorite player when I was a kid, and I still love him. And they still have all their jerseys and everything. That's a franchise legend.
And sometimes you also see, like in the Capitals instance, where they have one championship, but there's like four or five players that were with that team for 9, 10-plus years, and they were always consistent. They're always mm-hmm. one of the best on that team, and you talk to their fans, like you said, it's like he was a vital part of the 2018 Capitals Cup run. And then when the Capitals like, yeah, we're gonna retire his jersey on this day or this season, whatever, and NHL fans are like, why? He was just like a 50-point player. It's like, well, his contributions to the team and the organization was heartfelt, and it was more impactful than what a
great,
lot of NHL
great,
fans
great example is the LA Kings and Dustin Brown.
Yes.
And if you look at, I thought when they built him a statue and all this, I was like, really? But then the Kings fans, like, I love it. I don't think the Kings win two Stanley Cups without Dustin Brown.
No, they don't. He was one of their better captains.
Is he a Hall of Fame player? No, not at all.
Same. It's the same instance with TJ Oshie. Dustin Brown's in the Hall of Very Good.
I don't even know if he's that high up.
You don't think he's that high up? Is this nostalgia talking?
He kind of fell off a cliff his last few years in the league. He got stripped of the C.
I do remember that.
I mean, that was a little disrespectful, but Daryl Sutter was kind of an asshole.
But that was also his first year coaching the Kings, I think, right?
I think that's when he came back.
When he came back, okay.
Yeah, but still kind of disrespectful. Long-time captain to strip the C. But, Dustin Brown was a great player for the Kings, and they treat him like a franchise legend because he is a franchise legend. He's not a hockey legend, but the Kings, you can't tell a story of the Kings without mentioning Dustin Brown.
You can in hockey history.
Yes. That's always my guideline for a Hall of Fame.
That's a great guideline.
Yeah.
Last thing on our agenda today is going to be Atlanta. We're pretty much going to get a new
probably like team. 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. The NHL had a proposal. Well, I guess Atlanta had a proposal to the NHL.
I think that the city had to approve them proposing to the league.
And then that got approved. And I think 2 days ago, something else happened with that. I'm not 100% sure what happened, but it feels like at this point, an NHL team in Atlanta is going to be imminent. Mm-hmm. And if I'm the NHL at this point, I'm looking to now get another team out west, even up the league a little bit. In my opinion, though, whether that happens or not, we'll see. We've seen a couple places like a Houston, possibly. We've seen maybe team they've talked about in New Orleans, but again, that'll
be a little tough.
Yeah, but how do we feel about Atlanta getting a third team back? That's going to be a little...
I mean, the reason why they lost the Thrashers is they had really poor ownership. Management never really had a vision for what they wanted to do because ownership never really gave a damn. And, you know, they didn't win. And that's the biggest secret to a new franchise being successful is winning. Obviously, the first couple of years, you're probably not going to be great. Not every team's going to be like Vegas and mm-hmm. make it to the Stanley Cup final your first year of existence. I don't think that will ever happen again.
No.
That was just a once-in-a-lifetime thing that was insane to see. But, you know, Atlanta's one of the biggest TV markets, one of the biggest media markets in the United States, and they have every other sports team. They have an NFL, MLB, NBA team. Why don't they have a hockey team? It's because, you know, back in the day, like the Thrashers were owned by an ownership group. I think it was called Atlanta Spirit, and they also own the Atlanta Hawks. When the Atlanta Spirit bought the teams, they did not want the Thrashers, but they couldn't buy the Hawks without buying the Thrashers. And they never really gave a shit about the Thrashers. They were more of like basketball fans, and they wanted to care about the Hawks. And they never really gave management an idea of what, you know, okay, you have this much money to spend, or go big game hunting, or do this or do that. So management was just trying to, like, from a business perspective, it's like, we need to make money. Like, we need to get people in the stands. So they go out and make trades and make all these moves that would blow up in their face. And they were never really successful. They made the playoffs once, and they got swept.
The nostalgia kicked in a little bit. The Thrashers were they were just a team that existed at that point. They were never good,
yeah.
And Atlanta is one of the bigger cities in the entire U.S., and it's up there in North America. They have the biggest airport. They have every professional team you can think of.
This is a huge, huge hub, and it's kind of crazy that the NHL still doesn't have a team there.
And I think having them in there for a third time is going to be successful, especially, like you said, if you get ownership that cares about the team. I think that's where a lot of successful professional sports teams in general stem from. If you have an ownership group that cares about the team, they're going to stay in there. It's possible, especially with making that.
Well, they're going to make the right investments. Like, they're not going to be afraid to spend money on big players. Like, I think Vegas is a great opportunity. Their owner is very, very passionate about mm-hmm. the team being good. You know, he was laughed at when he said, you know, cup in 6 years. He got it.
It happened. That sixth year.
Because he's not afraid to spend money. He's not afraid to make big moves. And he's not afraid to move on from a guy that he likes. Unfortunately, it's a business. And, you know, Vegas runs it like a business, but they're good. They're good every year.
That's how you have to think of it. Vegas is a perfect example. It is a business. If there's a player that you see starting to slowly decline, even though he might be your favorite player on the team, listen, it's a business. We're going to have
like
to ship
you off.
They shipped
off Max Pacioretty for nothing.
They shipped off
Marc-Andre Fleury for nothing.
Right.
Cold-hearted moves. You can't even give the player a heads up. But they don't care. They do what they need to do.
Fleury got shipped off after he won the Vezina Trophy, too.
That
same offseason.
I can't believe they didn't even give him a head. He found it on Twitter.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you know, we just won the Vezina last year. We went to the conference final. We're trading you to the worst team in the league. Good luck.
Doesn't even get told by his own owners.
Yeah, he just scrolled on Twitter. He's like, what? Is this real? And he called the GM. He's like, yo, what's up? He's like, did you just trade me? He's like, oh, yeah. I was like, why? He's like, couldn't even give me a text.
I don't know. I just woke up this morning and kind of felt.
Well, like I didn't know you were busy with the kids or something. I don't know. I didn't want to bother you. He's like, it's kind of important. I'm moving to another part of the country now.
My fucking job we're talking
about.
Yeah,
I was like, I have to go to the Blackhawks? He almost retired because of that.
Yeah.
Because the Blackhawks were not good.
Still, they were one of the worst teams in the league then. They are now. I think that expansion for the NHL is going to be great, and I think that...
I get why the NHL expansion. I was still fine with 30 teams. I think I feel like you're going to do a point now. If you get to 30, they're going to go. They're going to have to add two because they're not going to have an odd number of teams. I honestly think they can get up to 38. They want to make all the divisions even.
I think 38 is the complete max you can go to that you should go to. 30 teams was felt like the better.
Yeah, outside of Atlanta, I'm trying to think of three other cities that would get a team. Because you want to have another one in the Eastern Conference. I mean, what city in the East Coast? I mean, they're not going back to Quebec City.
No.
I think they've made that abundantly clear that the NHL.
I don't think they get another team in Canada, I think.
No, I don't think so either. But like they've made it abundantly the NHL's made it abundantly clear they don't want a team in Quebec.
No, they don't. They would have had one and we would have heard something by now.
They made a bid in the last expansion progress with Vegas to Seattle and the NHL was like, yeah, no, we're good.
Yeah. Oklahoma City maybe.
I think another team at Texas is inevitable, whether it's Houston or San Antonio. I think
one of the two.
Kansas City, I think, is also a team, a city that has shown interest in getting an NHL team.
I do like that. It's either Houston or San Antonio in Texas. And I think it's either going to be Kansas City or Oklahoma City. And it's going to be those four and only two of them, one in each.
Well, but you still don't have a team on the East Coast, though. Unless you consider moving a team like Nashville to the Eastern Conference, which is they're the closest team to the Eastern time zone in the Western Conference, either them or Chicago.
You would have to pull. I would do probably Nashville. I think.
Yeah,
it would be a situation like a Columbus Detroit situation where they move to the East.
I'm sure Nashville will welcome that, a lot less travel. But, yeah, I'm trying to just think of the East Coast and, you know, the big cities there that don't have a team. And like
the East Coast is so, like...
Florida is not going to get another team. They're not going to put a team in... Like, they already have a team in North Carolina. They're not going to put a team in South Carolina. I mean, that Pennsylvania has Pittsburgh and Philly. You know, New England area, they don't really need a team outside of the Bruins. Hartford's not getting another team.
What about Baltimore?
I think it's too close to DC.
Yeah, you're right. It's literally right next to
I'm sure. I think most people in Baltimore are probably Capitals fans. That's just me assuming, but
kind of forgot about the Capitals.
Yeah.
Yeah, Baltimore is like right next to DC.
Yeah. I can't really think of anywhere else on the East Coast.
We're probably missing some
outside of Atlanta. I mean, I'm just trying to think of like the bigger cities there. I mean, you got New York. New York has two teams. Mm-hmm. New Jersey, Pennsylvania has two. The Buffalo and New York as well. Boston pretty much covers the New England area. You got Carolina. You got two Florida teams that cover both sides of Florida. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of any off the top of my head besides Atlanta where they're meeting a hole in the market.
The East Coast is so saturated.
Well, I mean, it's a big population area. Way more people live on the East Coast of the United States than the West side of the West Coast of the United States, like outside of California, like the Midwest. Texas is pretty much the big central hub population-wise, and then Midwest is a bunch of bigger cities, but nothing like the East Coast.
They're so spread out in the Midwest.
Yeah. You got like all the East Coast, especially the New York area. Mm-hmm. Like that's where there's so many teams in that little area. And then the West Coast, you got pretty much California. That's about
and then it. Anywhere up north from like past Illinois west all the way up into Washington. Yeah, like, you have
North
like
Dakota
nothing.
Or South Dakota is not getting a team. No. Or Idaho or Montana. Like that ain't happening. There's not enough people to live there.
No.
Utah was a stretch with like because they're one of the smaller population markets in the league now. So I think Arizona will get another team.
Arizona, I like that. I think Portland would be a little bit too close to Seattle.
I mean, they can sustain an NBA team.
Yeah. And their NBA team is very, very popular.
I mean, that's their only pro sports team they have.
Yeah,
so.
It is.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But I do think by, I want to say 2028, we'll know for sure if we're getting two new teams. Atlanta's definitely going to be one of them. And I think they'll add another West Coast team. Whether an Arizona franchise is ready to get going or they add another team in Texas or Kansas City. But I think we're definitely getting at least two more teams by 2028.
I have a feeling, obviously Atlanta, they already have an 18,000 seat arena ready.
Yeah.
But then you also have, I think with the West, it's either going to be Arizona or Houston, I have a feeling. I think so.
I think Houston's ready for a team. I think part of the issue with Houston is the owner of the Rockets won't share the arena with an NHL team because the arena was designed for basketball viewing. And that's an issue they're having in Utah right now. It moves so fast, but the owner was open to, because I think Ryan Smith
owns
the arena. But he also owns the arena. It's not like a city owned thing. So, and he was open to spending the money necessary to like renovate it. So make it for basketball and for hockey. Because there's plenty of arenas in the league that are multi-purpose. Like the Flyers and Sixers share a building, or the Knicks and the Rangers. Like it's possible. It's just, Houston never had to worry about an NHL team. So they designed it specifically around basketball. Like in Utah, that arena is built for basketball. And there's some areas where you're going to watch hockey, you're not going to be able to see well because hockey has very different viewpoints than basketball. It's a much bigger area of play.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see the expansion stuff. And again, stop at 38 teams. I think there's going to be another two teams by 2030.
I mean, if we're getting to a point, we might have to talk about expanding the playoffs eventually at one point if we're going to keep adding teams to the league.
You're going to have to.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, half the league makes the playoffs. It will be interesting to see what happens. And then, you know, especially these cup contenders, if we get to 38 teams, their first round picks are going to be meaningless to them because at that point they're becoming like mid second round picks. Yeah.
You're going to have to expand the draft. You're going to get more players drafted coming into the league. And I've seen this question that maybe the league becomes watered down.
I don't know about that. I think you'll add more parity. I think teams learned a lot from the first expansion with Vegas. It was the first expansion forever.
Yeah,
we'll see. But I still think you're going to have good parity around the league. I think it will honestly lead to more parity, more options for players to go to, more trades. You're not going to see like a singular team stacking up, I think, as much. Like Florida was just kind of a storm. Like they were building that for years. And, you know, people forget they traded for Sam Bennett like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
They traded for Sam Reinhart like 4 years ago. And it didn't work right away.
It took a couple of years.
And then Paul Maurice comes in and it just worked. Like they weren't, it wasn't like they built a super team. And they was just all of a sudden everyone was like, yeah, we're going to Florida, we're going to win. I'm like, no, they took their time building that. Same thing with Tampa Bay.
A lot of these teams, it takes time to build.
Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, it's Florida, like, no income tax and beautiful weather. It's like, yeah, I mean, that plays a part in it, but they still traded for a lot of these guys. It's not like they signed them.
It's the same thing like what's been going on with most of the California teams, like the Ducks, San Jose. It's like, yeah, it's California, but also, A, they have shitload of taxes. But B, it's just, even though it's nice weather, the team sucks, so why would we want to go there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into a decision why a player will go to a certain area, for sure.
That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, head over down to the description below and follow all of our socials, and also subscribe, notification bell, and we'll see you guys in our next episode.